Welcome to the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Join us now as we get to know people like us who are working toward their own success. Here is your host, Chris Peterson.
My guest today is Pramit, the founder of the company building the Louis Voice Control app. You've probably seen ads for the Louis Voice Control app on various social media sites. And if you'd like to learn more about it, you can do so by going to louievoice.com. That's louievoice.com. Pramit, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chris, for having me in your show.
I want to get to the Louis app, but I'd like to learn a little bit about you first. You're visually impaired, correct?
That's right.
What is it like to be visually impaired in India? Did you grow up that way?
No, actually, I had a regular vision. And in fact, mine was a sort of a freakish incident. So I am by education a computer engineer. Then I've done my MBA. And I was working with global companies like Unilever, Motorola, Quest Diagnostics. So about 21 years back, I had some joint pains, which doctors could not diagnose. So I was put on a drug. And so that drug sort of ensured that while my joint pains disappeared, but then it reacted on my retina. So all of a sudden, literally overnight, my vision actually dropped quite a bit. So this was almost 21 years back. And then at that time, I could still get some corrections. So I sort of still managed. But I think it was really about 9 years back when my vision had kept on dropping. And 9 years back, suddenly it took a nosedive. And I realized everything was getting extremely cloudy, foggy, wavy. I couldn't read anything irrespective of the size of the font. So that is what really jolted me about 9 years back.
And what services exist in India, or what did you have access to help you adjust?
Okay, so I think it's all developing. So what my experience is that kids who have had lost their vision early, now I think for them, there are hostels, schools, training centers, etc., where they are taught accessibility. In fact, some people are doing brilliant jobs where they are, basically putting kids in regular schools. Visually impaired kids are going with sighted kids in integrated programs. So where, they also, because one part of it is, of course, how do I learn? How do I use accessible technology? Other bit is extremely important as you grow up is how do you deal with people around you? How do you deal with the society? So I think it's happening. Of course, the numbers are very large. So my sense is that in urban areas, there is still, I think, reasonably decent access. As you one goes, of course, into rural and, where the distances may be large, facilities may not be there. So there it's still a challenge.
What is society's attitude towards visually impaired people in India? And how did you feel about it when you started to lose your vision?
Oh, okay. Actually, let me first give my one example when I was sighted, right? And how I myself used to look at a visually impaired. I think that's very relevant because that was, I think, symptomatic of, what happens in the larger society. So basically, see, what happens is that when I was sighted, my entire focus was on, getting good education, good job, going up the corporate ladder. So a lot of people, I guess, would be like me, who will be very self-centered, who are just sort of, just driven by their own material success. So to be honest, I did see people on the road never try to empathize, never try to understand. And in my mind, the person cannot see, so how will he manage? And I think if you ask me even now, I mean, now, of course, I'm talking to a lot of corporates and trying to see, if they're open to the idea of giving employment to those who are visually impaired. And there is still this whole block, and I think it has to do with the lack of awareness that there are lots of technologies available and a person can actually do a lot despite their visual impairment. So I think those are still areas, I see it with my friends and I'm not surprised because I used to be like that, right? So this is something that will, I think, requires to my mind a more like a mass campaign, which, makes people aware that there are lots of these technologies which, I mean, they can do mobile phones effectively, they can do desktop effectively, there's a lot of work they can do. And I can tell you, in our own company, we have 3 more visually impaired apart from me. And I mean, some of the best work comes actually from the visually impaired team members.
When you were losing your vision, were you aware of other people who were visually impaired? Did you have people that you could get support from or learn from that maybe were further along in that journey than you?
Okay. So, you know, I was sort of in that sense, a bit of a loner in the sense that because I had a computer engineering background, so I was anyway comfortable with technology. So I think as my vision would drop one more level, I would just on my own figure out solutions. Oh, this is how I can increase the font size. Okay, this is how I increase the background, you know, make it high contrast, all of that. And even 9 years back when I was sort of almost grounded, jolted, I was sitting at home 2.5-3 years doing nothing. And I sort of started figuring out screen readers. First time I thought the phone has got locked. So I had to go to Google to figure out how to get out of the screen reader. I figured out NVDA as a screen reader for desktop purely because the name sounded different. So I said, okay, name sounds different. Let me try it out. So my own journey was actually a lot of these experimentations, discovery on my own. And honestly, I didn't even make any effort to figure out if there are people who can train me, etc. I just thought I'll do it myself. But, you know, that experience has helped because as I looked at building Louis, etc., because I had that open mind, I was not driven by, you know, I tried all kind of things in my own way with my own formula. I had an open mind as to, you know, what can come in. Nobody, you know, because when you get overtrained, also the problem is that you tend to then use things only in a certain way. So I think there is a good and bad. I think it took me longer to adjust, but then also meant that, you know, I had this completely open mind.
We'll get back to our interview in just a moment, but first.
When it comes to money, do you feel a little lost? When you're in an unfamiliar financial environment and need a hand in understanding the lay of the land, Penny Forward is here to help. We provide affordable one-on-one and group financial education programs that give you the confidence to get out there and achieve your goals. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do.
Do you have a short success story that you would like to share on the air? Leave us a message at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find it at pennyforward.com/podcast.
So tell me about starting your company. When did that happen and how did you make the decision to do that?
So this is again, you know, my life, particularly in the last 10 years have been series of, you know, incidents, which honestly, I believe that somebody, you know, some higher divine forces were probably engineering it. So like I told you, 2.5-3 years, I was sitting at home, slowly got out of it, got some confidence back, started doing some consulting work. I was looking for fresh assignments that got me a meeting with the managing director of Sequoia Capital in India. And Sequoia is a big venture capital company in US. They're pretty big in India as well. And in midst of, you know, the gentleman heard my story and in midst of it, he says, why don't you build apps for visually impaired people like yourselves, you know? And I said, you know, oh, where is this coming from? I said, no, I want to do consulting. He said, no, don't waste your time there. Build something like this, right? So I think that planted a thought in my mind. And the more I thought about it, Chris, I thought that, look, I can keep doing consulting and all of these things. I had one or two very safe, stable consulting assignments. But then, you know, I said, look, if I'm on my deathbed and, you know, I don't want to go down with that regret that, you know, there was an opportunity to leverage my own disability and build something that might work for other friends. You know, so I just thought that this is like a golden opportunity. I must take it on. Then, of course, Chris, always the issue comes that, you know, sometimes when we look at current solutions, it's easy to sort of poke holes. It's easy to crib and criticize and say, oh, this one is not that good. This doesn't work. That doesn't work. So this same gentleman pushed me and he said, look, enough of that. Tell me what is good. Put it down on a half sheet of paper. And I can tell you, it's not easy at all. You know, putting down, okay, what is it that will really work for visually impaired friends? But anyway, so I did that. And how I did that is another, you know, chance event. I had gone to meet a friend. This was all happened around the same time. And this friend took my smartphone and he offered to book Uber for me. He asked me my destination, put it into Uber, the 3-4 options which came. I asked him to select a particular one. Similarly, he told me the rides, the fares. Again, I made a selection, take this one. And then he reconfirmed everything with me. He booked my Uber. He messaged the driver for me, called the driver. I spoke to the driver. So, you know, all of that was a really pleasant and convenient experience. And on the way back in Uber, I just thought that, look, as a visually impaired, I want to be independent and I want to be in charge of things. And here, there was something which was convenient, and yet I was the one calling the shots all along. So like a eureka thing, a thought just came. And I said, what if I were to build a virtual friend right there on the phone screen, which will do exactly what my human friend was doing? So it will engage in a two-way voice interaction with me. It will take my voice commands. It will allow me to do each and everything that a sighted person can, all with just my voice command. So I can do each and everything within an app. And it will do a special hand-holding because it will be designed keeping the needs of a blind person in mind who cannot see the screen at all. So this is really how, Chris, the thought for Louis voice control came. And the idea, like I said, is very simple. Just give it voice commands and it will allow you to control popular apps as well as phone settings, all with just voice commands.
So you had a background in computer engineering, so I imagine you had had some experience with building apps before, maybe not mobile apps, but apps of some kind, correct?
Yeah, so I had actually 4 years of computer engineering. So I'd done 4 years of very active programming. Though after that, because I went into MBA, I went more into areas of marketing, running businesses. I have built startup businesses from scratch, more in a business sense. But I think all that stays with you. So, one is not afraid of technology. One can appreciate technology. One understands, you know, how this whole thing works. It's not a mystery or anything. So I think combination of my engineering skills with my business management skills, you know, all of that is really helping end to end, actually.
So tell me what the process was like to build the Louis Voice Control app. Was it just you, or were you really building a company that did it, or how did that all work?
Yeah, I think great question. Yeah, so initially I was alone, and this is like almost four and a half years back. So I thought of the idea. Then, of course, I created a vision. And you know, funny thing is, even 4 years back, I would close my eyes and I could see Louis working in exactly the way it works now. So I had a very clear vision. But then, you know, one of the things we realized, Chris, is we went to the App Store, the Android Play Store, and we tried to look for similar apps and we didn't find a single one. So we said something seems wrong because the idea is so ridiculously simple. And normally if you see any one idea, there are 10 other apps, 20 other apps of similar kind. So that got us thinking that there's something tricky. So fortunately, the gentleman at Sequoia had offered to put in his own money. He got a couple of other startup founders to put in money. So the money, because it's very important. Money is very important to get a startup off the ground. So that was not an issue. But then we said, look, I mean, is it even technically feasible? So here a couple of companies helped us do basic early prototypes completely for free, didn't charge us anything, I think, because of the social nature of the project. Once we knew with their prototype that, look, there is possibly a light at the end of the tunnel, 2.5 years back, we formally started the company. And like I said, it's a startup. Now, initially, we started with 2 Android developers. And then since then, it has been growing. Now, we are a total team of 13 with 6 developers. Like I said, 3 more visually impaired people, a couple of people in marketing. And basically, we have investors today in US, India, and Singapore. In fact, a couple of investors happen to be themselves visually impaired. So I think we run it, so while we are structured like a typical tech startup, but I think the spirit is that of a social venture, a social enterprise saying that, look, how can we put this technology to some good use, impact lives of, at least a few people in a positive way. So that's really what is driving the whole thing.
We'll continue our interview in a moment, but first.
Sometimes people ask me, Chris, why should I pay someone to help me save money? If I did it all myself, wouldn't I be able to save even more? Well, that isn't necessarily true, and it's all about behavior. Some very large companies in the financial services industry, Vanguard and Russell Investing, have done some studies on just this subject, and they have concluded, after studying thousands of customers over decades, that customers earn an average of 3% more by paying a financial advisor to help them invest than by doing it themselves. Why would this be? Well, people make a lot of decisions based on their emotions. Oftentimes, people get excited when the stock market is doing well and they buy more stock. And people get scared when the stock market isn't doing so well and they sell a lot of stock. And this can reduce the amount of money that you earn when investing in the stock market. A financial advisor can help temper those emotions and make you able to make better decisions by keeping you calm, even in turbulent times. It's counterintuitive, but paying someone really can pay off in the end.
Do you have a tip or trick you've discovered that makes managing your finances easier? Tell us about it at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find us at pennyforward.com/podcast.
I'm curious to know more because you said that money is very important in building a startup like this. What is it like to go through the process of talking to venture capitalists or investors about contributing money to something like this?
Okay, it's not easy at all. So I think initially what we had to do was excite them with the technology, with the thought that look, because if you see, I mean, the world is moving towards voice. And there's a lot of massive amount of investment that's going into, you know, across, I mean, and it's not just mobile phone or a desktop. I mean, today the microwave oven and, you know, washing machine, people, cars. I mean, this whole voice technology is being put in everywhere. So I think, fortunately, there were these early investors who knew the power of this technology. And somewhere, you know, there was this strange thing that because we were building it for a blind person, you know, their view was that will then work for everybody. Because if it works for a person who cannot see the screen, right, then it works for everybody, the solution. So I think that's what really got them initially interested. But just, Chris, just to, you know, but they, you know, money normally doesn't come one shot. So like initial, the money will come in tranches. So there'll be certain milestones and they'll say, okay, initially take $30,000 and let's see what you come back with in, you know, next, whatever, 3-4 months, 5 months. And so initially, let me tell you, 5-6 months, we couldn't write a single line of code. It was so complex. We wanted to hit certain milestones, but then, you know, it took us about 5-6 months. So we had no money. We had run out of money and, you know, we had overspent, in fact. But then we were lucky that we were managed to crack it in time. And then, you know, so the journey has been all along one of ups and downs. We keep running out of money. By the way, we were running out of money in February, just a couple of months back, then got some more money. Now we have money till September. We are talking to a couple of social impact funds. Hopefully we'll get some more money. So it's sort of, you know, I think people want to see progress. People want to see that you are building something good, that you're right now we have users in about 90 countries. So we depend a lot on the user feedback. And that really helps us improve the product.
Talk a little bit about the development process. What were some of the problems that you had to solve to get the app off the ground?
Okay. So like I told you initially, I think there were some technology milestones we created. Like, can we do this? Can we do that? You know, that kind of thing. And we really struggled. Because just to tell you, Chris, in this particular field, if you look at a regular app, one can even Google it and one might even be able to find a sample code written for that kind of app. Not so in this particular space. So the moment you go into accessibility, the moment you go into voice, and there's a certain way. So by the way, Lua is built so that it can work both on top of the screen as well as under the screen with APIs or without APIs. So there's a lot of flexibility that gives us. Even if something is not fully accessible, we can manage to do it. We have built in image recognition and so on. So, but in early stages, like I said, it was tough because there was no help. So we had to really do it all ourselves. And it was really a lot of tinkering around, a lot of creative solutions that one had to look at. And I think once we did that, and once we got a handle on a few things, even along the way, life has never been easy. So just for example, we could do WhatsApp, for example. It's like Messenger and, you know, almost 70-80% of communication between visually impaired people or in visually impaired groups happens through voice messages, voice notes. And we found we were just finding it absolutely difficult, impossible to do it. And the investors told us how ridiculous. You're building it for visually impaired and you can't even, the person can't even send a voice note. But we took it as a challenge, you know, cracked it. Then another challenge is, Chris, is that most developers are sighted. As in, I was looking for people who are visually impaired, but you know, couldn't find good developers who are visually impaired. Now, but the problem with the sighted in the early stage was that you know, somebody look at the screen and say, "Oh, it's working fine," and I had to then, you know, buy some blindfolds and say, "Okay, put this on. Now tell me, is it working fine?" You know, because of course, a sighted person can see the screen. So those were all early challenges. We brought in more visually impaired people in the team so they could see how we use the phones, you know, what are the challenges we face. So I think gradually now today the team has evolved to the point that, in fact, there are a couple of sighted people who can use the phone and understand the needs of a visually impaired better than even the visually impaired people. So that's how the team has evolved.
What were some of the challenges in finding visually impaired developers to bring on the team?
So I tried all over. Now, unfortunately, at least in India, you know, see what happens is this whole field of STEM, science, technology, maths, is really, you know, there are these perceptions amongst educational institutes, even I would say amongst blind organizations, that a visually impaired cannot do it. So what therefore happens is they end up doing a lot of this consulting for accessibility testing, basically testing an app or a website for accessibility. But really, there is no course. Nobody is really teaching them how to code. And my own belief is, having done it myself, I really feel that all that requires is really a lot of common sense and smartness. That's it. So we did look around, including somebody in US who works with Microsoft, but of course it was not possible for him to, you know, join our team. So it's very, very rare. I would say in the whole visually impaired community, very rare to find people who are good developers.
Do you see yourself hiring more if you can find them?
Oh, absolutely. Now the great thing, Chris, and I'm calling it great because there is always a you know, a plus side to anything. So this whole COVID thing over the last 1 year, you know, if you had asked me, let's say January 2020, and I would have said, oh, no, everybody works from home. So if I can find somebody in Delhi, it works. Otherwise, no. And I would have said over my dead body. But today, you know, we have been working for over a year now out of, you know, we left our office, of course, saved money. And we are all now working from home. I can tell you our productivity has gone up tremendously by 50, 60%. We give our people a lot of flexibility. They work till late in the night, etc. So the great thing now is that, I mean, because everybody is working from home, we realize that, look, why do we need to hire people from Delhi or for that matter from India? I mean, they can be theoretically from anywhere in the world. It doesn't really matter. So I think now with a very different approach, we are actively looking for people because I believe that visually impaired developers will bring a very different angle to the whole thing. Right, because the thinking will be different and the approach will be different. I think the user experience will become much better. So hopefully we'll find somebody.
What kind of user feedback have you received?
Okay, so we have been getting feedback, actively seeking feedback over the last 5 months since November. Now see, overall, if you ask me, overall, it's pretty positive, very, very encouraging. But, you know, for me, what's more important is that if somebody puts in a feedback and says, okay, great app, nice one, pretty good. I mean, it doesn't help really. So what I'm always seeking is, no, use the app and give me a, you know, kind of a, like a critical feedback, you know, positives and negatives. What are the things which didn't work for you? What are the things which you found difficult? What are the things we should improve? Which are the apps we should voice enable? Stuff like that. So fortunately, like I said, there are users in 90 countries. And in fact, we have a group of users, about 90 users who are actively giving us feedback on almost update-to-update basis. And there are users across the world. My email ID, my WhatsApp, my Messenger details are practically, you know, freely distributed. So I keep talking to at least 4 to 5 new users across the world practically on a daily basis. So that really, really helps. So that really tells us, okay, what do they need? What are the problems they are facing? Right? Because otherwise, Chris, it's very easy to get into this whole founder's ego. In fact, for a while, I did get into it. So founder's ego basically is that, you know, what I've created is the greatest and the best, right? And if somebody says it's not good, not working for me, then, you know, that somebody must be an idiot. You know, that kind of a mindset. Now, that doesn't help. So you got to be completely open, take critical feedback, take good feedback, you know, if it's working. So today I try and do that. So if it's working for you, tell me why and how we can improve it. If it's not working for you, tell me the areas that we need fixing on. So I think it has been a great journey today. There's a lot of clarity on what we should build on, you know, which apps to voice enable next. So that's really helping.
We'll continue our interview in a moment. But first,
I want to tell you really quickly about some folks at superblink.org. They are the folks that make these podcasts sound as amazing as they do. Have you ever thought about putting music or sound effects or having your podcast professionally edited? There is no other place that you need to go. Superblink.org is where to go to have it done in a way that is professional, competent, and affordable. Don't go anywhere else. Look at superblink.org for all of your audio needs.
Do you have a favorite budgeting, banking, or investing app? Tell us about it at 952-856-0313. If you missed that number, you can always find it at pennyforward.com/podcast.
You described how you had a person help you book an Uber and how that inspired you to create Louie. Can you describe for me now a scenario where someone would use Louie to perform a daily task?
Yeah. So, for example, Uber we talked about. So Uber is exactly the same, like the way I just told you. In fact, every time there is some confusion as to how we should go about building Louie, I just close my eyes and say, okay, across my desk, if my friend, sighted friend, were to be sitting, what will he say? What will he do? And that always gives me the answer. Then I know, okay, Louie needs to do this. Louie needs to do that. So in terms of, let's say, practical task, I mean, there can be as simple as, it can be calling somebody, it can be booking your Uber. A lot of us want to use YouTube. And in YouTube, for example, simple things like it will ask you for which video you want to search. You can, so it will not just play the latest, result. So the way Louie is built, like I said, one can do each and everything that a sighted person can. So it will show you multiple results, just like it will do in Uber. One can easily make selection. Then we have added value. So in every app, so for example, it's very painful to skip ads in YouTube. And by the way, 70% of ads anyway get skipped. So visually impaired friends told me, just because I'm not sighted, does it mean that I have to watch each and every ad or hear each and every ad? So Louie does that automatically if you activate a setting. Similarly, it can give you complete control over the video. So if it's, let's say, a 1 hour video. Now, if one is using a screen reader, one has to forward it in 30 seconds, 1 minute max. So imagine if I have to forward it by 10 minutes, how difficult it is. With Louie, things get simple because I can just say forward by 11 minutes, 42 seconds, and it does that precisely. So there are all these little touches that have been built into this whole thing. The idea being that, you know, do a good handholding and give a lot more functionality and control over the apps that we normally do.
If I want to find out how Louie works, besides installing the app and trying it myself, where can I find more information?
Okay, so the best way to head over is, one to the website, which is louievoice.com. And Louie is spelled out as L-O-U-I-E, so louievoice.com. Or one can find the channel. So we have a YouTube channel where there are more than 90 videos. And by the way, those videos are also built into the app. So in the app settings, there is a demo and a video section where there is actually a user guide. There is also these 90 videos, which can help a person on everything. How to cancel an Uber ride, how to book an Uber ride, how to call the driver, how to message. I mean, each and everything, how to change your destination even after booking. So a lot of that resource is there. And even during the early setup, we try and focus. The early setup has got multiple screens, basically to make the user aware of how to use Louie, what to expect. So there is even a small video built in even during the setup just to sort of make a user comfortable with the idea of using Lui.
What do you see happening next with Lui?
Oh, okay. So there is a lot, actually. I mean, I can clearly tell you next, you know, assuming that funding will keep rolling, next 5 years, we'll have our hands full. So this is how we are going. So number one, what we are doing is that we first try and solve problems of visually impaired. So I'll give you examples, like, for example, images. Images can be really like, what to do with them. I got three New Year greetings as images. So now in Lui, we have integrated image recognition. So it can describe an image in a basic way, and it can read the text on the image. Then things like offline working without internet. So there are a few things. So, you know, one is able to do calling, phone calling, even text messaging is just going in. So a lot of these things one can do. One doesn't need internet. So we have built in an offline, the moment it detects there is no internet, it switches to the offline mode. Similarly, you know, simple things like Google search, being able to browse around, being able to read articles. A lot of these documents come now, and something like a scanned PDF document can be quite a challenge. So we just in a week's time releasing an update which will be able to handle any kind of document, scanned or otherwise. It will have the ability to read it out. Then, of course, we look at various apps that we need to voice enable, and the whole approach is that, okay, what are the various apps that in a visually impaired life we need to use? So, for example, right now, what we are working on, like I said, is Google search, Gmail, email is very important, document reading, Facebook Messenger. Next, we'll take on Facebook, Telegram, possibly even Instagram, because now we can do images. And then we want to do a food ordering app, an e-commerce app. There is already a feature called Where Am I? We want to integrate it with Google Maps so that one can get complete guidance, navigation, all with just voice commands. So that's one part of it on Android. Other thing we are now actively working on is iOS and how we can make Lui for iPhones. Maybe not in exactly the same way, but in a somewhat different way. So there is work happening. So we are very sure that we'll do the same technical feasibility in the second half of the year, and hopefully have Lui out for iPhones early next year. And then, Chris, also to tell you, because there is this whole question of, you know, how do we sustain ourselves in money terms? Do we make Lui a paid app, or can we create some other revenues, streams of revenues? So what we are also now approaching various corporates whose apps we can voice enable, but then charge them money for it. So hopefully if that can take off, because we have found, in fact, right now we are talking to a couple of one very large health insurance company in US, another world's largest diagnostics company. So hopefully, if we can excite them, interest them, so that will allow us to gain revenues and keep the app free for the visually impaired friends. So that's really, I would say, some of the tasks for next 1 or 2 years.
Well, thank you. That's very interesting. Again, that website is luivoice.com, correct?
Correct.
Is there anything else you want people to know before we shut down the interview here?
Just one last point, because this is a question very, very often asked, is that how is Lui different from all the voice assistants? I mean, all the big names, Google Assistant, Siri, Alexa. So I think there are fundamentally three differences. So one, like I mentioned, is that Lui does a continuous voice interaction. Now, just like we are talking, Chris, right now. Now, imagine if I were to book an Uber and every time Lui were to go silent, every time I have to wake it up and say, hey, Lui, or hey, Chris. You know, imagine how difficult life becomes. So Lui does this continuous interaction, handholding. It allows the users to do each and everything within an app. So that's how we have configured Lui. And the third massive difference is that, we all have our own formula. We all probably use a screen reader and, may want to use Lui now, may not want to use Lui. So what Lui does is, let's say I've already done my initial booking with Uber. And then, but I want to message the driver with using Lui, maybe call the driver using Lui, make a free phone call. So basically all that one needs to do is, of course, there's one way to start Lui's, hey, Lui, one can just double shake the phone. And Lui comes on any screen of the supported app. It will automatically figure out where the user is and just take the user forward from there. You know, it will figure out the status, what are the options available. So it makes for, really handy that, and it can, of course, work with and without a screen reader. So one doesn't have to switch off a screen reader to use Louis. It can also work equally well without a screen reader. So these are all, I would say, big differences when it compares with the voice assistants.
Well, Pramit, thank you for being here. This has been very informative. I really appreciate it.
Right. Thank you, Chris. I think it has been really great to talk to you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Penny Forward podcast. Penny Forward is a community of people who are blind, their families and friends who share an interest in financial independence. Visit pennyforward.com to learn more about who we are and what we do. Until next time, from all of us in the Penny Forward community, thanks for listening.